First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
Good morning, Interfaith leaders meet tonight in the city to grill two candidates running to lead the sheriff's office in Jacksonville. Good morning and live from Studio 2, I'm Dan Scanlon in for Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect and thank you for listening. Now, just ahead, the candidates for sheriff have been invited to meet the public tonight, just one night before Election Day. So you can join our conversation here at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or you can tweet me at DanScanlon8. Then later, a respiratory emergency for kids in the city. What doctors want you to know right now about RSV infections. But first this hour, we've said it before, you've heard it all over the news. Tomorrow is Election Day, and the biggest local race on your ballot is the contest for Jacksonville Sheriff. And tonight, the two candidates running for that office, T.K. Waters, the Republican, and Lakeisha Burton, the Democrat, have been invited to a special forum looking at the city's high homicide rate and a chance for citizens to talk about their experiences with unnecessary arrests. We've got a preview right here with the iCare 2022 Community Problems Assembly. So we welcome to the studio iCare member Geneva Pittman. Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
Brian Lipinski of Unitarian Universalist Church of Jacksonville.
Hello.
Oh, sorry. And Father Keith Oglesby from Christ Episcopal Church in Pontevedra. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning.
Now, again, call us at 549-2937 so we can chat about this. But again, just a little history first. What is iCare? I've been covering it myself as a reporter here for years. There's multiple issues. It is a multi-denominational community, pastors, church members group. But one of you take it from there.
Yeah, the acronym iCare stands for Interfaith Coalition for Action, Reconciliation, and Empowerment. We are made up of 38 congregations of all faith, race, and economic backgrounds from all over Jacksonville. We were formed in 1997, and our vision is to powerfully address citywide problems. And we hold our city officials, those that are elected and those that are appointed, we hold them accountable for fixing the problems that people are dealing with in Jacksonville.
And again, the two problems that I'm aware of that I've covered is, number one, the adult civil citations, or the desire to, as many other jurisdictions are doing, to get rid of them. And the other is certainly flooding, and certainly for at least one member here, the water's right at his doorstep of his church sometimes. And I've covered many floodings, and we've got more heavy rain coming. But first of all, let's talk about the adult civil citations, just very briefly. That's an issue that's been battled with the sheriff's office now for a number of years. And so far, the sheriff's office, not interested. State Attorney Melissa Nelson, interested. Other sheriffs on tape during your ceremonies, your events, interested, saying they work. So very quickly, let's get to that before we talk about tonight.
Well, the adult civil citations, during our research, we found out that over 14,500 people got a criminal record for charges such as paperwork problems, expired tags, or suspended license. And most of those are for insurance violations. And what we are interested in is getting civil citations for adults for these minor crimes. These are not crimes that will endanger anyone's life. So that's what we're working now. And we are hoping that whenever the new sheriff is in place, we will be able to talk to that person and introduce.
Well, you have the two sheriff's candidates. You've invited both of them to come to Christ the King Catholic Church in Arlington at 7 o'clock tonight. Have to tell folks, that's my church, and one of your members is my pastor, Monsignor Bodie, so we'll get that out of the way. But obviously, both of them have been invited. I saw Lakeisha Burton last week at the One Jack's Vigil. She said she planned to be there. What's the reason that you're bringing both candidates in on the eve of the election, where one of them will be briefly elected sheriff, and then they may have to run all over again?
So the main reason is, we were just hearing from Geneva, is we like to hold public officials accountable. So even though they're not either one in that role yet, we want the voters to understand. We want to understand where they stand on the issues, just so we can be part of an ongoing conversation with whoever comes next, whoever is elected. And we feel it's such an important issue. And that's not, of course, going to be the only issue, but that is one of the things that we're going to focus on, along with trying to prevent violence. So a particular question on that. And then a commitment to come to what we call the Nehemiah Assembly in the spring, which is an ongoing annual event to, again, hold people accountable.
And the Nehemiah Assembly has been interesting the past few years. It's been online, and you've had hundreds of people sign in. And then you actually met at Christ the King for your last one, and you had an empty chair for Sheriff Williams because historically in the past year, year and a half before he departed, he would not meet with you, even to the point of some of your folks standing there and trying to get some information to him, and he was not available. And then you had an empty chair representing him. Now we're in a whole new boat. We have an interim sheriff who's keeping things running nicely. The next sheriff's going to be doing it and have to start campaigning again if they choose. So tonight, is it too early to be pushing them on these issues, or is it time to get this boat in the water, so to speak?
Well, we just want to know where they stand and understand then as we go forward with whoever the new sheriff is, they know what we're working toward and that they are also on the record, so to speak. Either they are in favor of these questions that we'll be asking or they're against. And that will help us know which direction we need to take in continuing the conversation, working for what we think is best, what we've learned from the people of Jacksonville, what's best for them.
What's been intriguing with the Nehemiah Assembly is all being on Zoom or being on online is you do have videos of sheriffs in Florida. You have Melissa Nelson going on the record and saying, I'm in favor of this. Melissa Nelson, our state attorney, has a similar program for prosecution. And other sheriffs have stated that this cuts down on the paperwork. This cuts down on issues. But maybe the most meaningful part that you're in favor of is one man, one woman, sometimes black, many times black, unfortunately, does not have this record on this crime on their record that then dogs them for years as they try to get employment, as they try to move up in the world, because it's realistically nothing more than a violation or whatever. Correct?
Correct.
Let's all chime in on that. I mean, because that's you guys know it better than me.
So what it's doing really is you're holding those persons like accountable, but we don't want them to have a record. We want them to be able to go to their jobs, have homes. And for minor offenses like driving with a suspended license or expired tag, that's something that, you know, it's to me, it's ludicrous to let them go to jail.
And I would say oftentimes some of us have these violations, if you will, and we don't even know it. A lot of these are paperwork things that have fallen through the cracks, you know, that you know might not even be the person's fault, but they, without their knowledge, build over time. And then, so it seems very unfair.
And ask anybody who has a job that if you have to do pretrial after pretrial after pretrial, even if it's only for half an hour at a time, that's time off a job, and some bosses just don't care, and you lose the job because you spent so much time in court for a minor issue that could have been paid for with a fine or handled with just one appearance before a judge or whatever. So I understand that. We've got Stanley on the line right now. So, Stanley, let's take your question. Stanley, are you there?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, what's your question?
Well, it's not a question here. I wanted to get them to think about this when I come to this interfaith ministers, where they are fair to understand that the sheriff worked for the governor. And we continue to go to the sheriff when it comes to laws and leadership. We need to be going to the governor. And I can't understand why they keep doing that and also going to the state attorney, local and statewide concerning Jacksonville. Jacksonville has some systemic problems when it comes to JSO. Thank you.
Thank you, Stanley. Any response to that, folks?
We are a local organization, and so we tackle local issues. So that's the reason that we go to. The sheriff is the one that can make that decision because his officers are the ones that's on the street. So then once the sheriff makes the decision, then he has to contact the state attorney. And the two of them work together to fix the problem.
And Ms. Nelson has already stated publicly to you folks, yes, and to us that she would like to be involved in this program. There's already a teen, yes, program, but she cannot take it on the prosecution, right, end until the arresting end or the police end handles it. So,
And in the past, with youth civil citations, Sheriff Williams and State Attorney Nelson did work together and made a very successful program so that we have greatly reduced the number of incarcerated youth. And so that Sheriff Williams and State Attorney Nelson agree, and they're, you know, in the past he has agreed and acknowledges that. So we're just trying to extend an already successful program for youth to adults, and where it's been successful already in other jurisdictions for adults. So.
Again, folks, please call in. This is probably the most important race, although there's many important races on our ballot tomorrow. 549-2937, that is 549-2937. Give us a yell and give us some conversation here on what's happening. The other thing that's been very big that has been talked about at the Nehemiah Assembly and elsewhere in ICARE is flooding. And we just went through it with Ian, and most of it was Tidal the next day. Now here we have something that just got named that's going to soak us a lot come Wednesday, Thursday. So the other issue that ICARE has been pushing of late is the increasing flooding problem in the Jacksonville area. And certainly, right, Father, you know, yeah, your church parking lot right on a creek there.
Right.
I'm sure you get the ark ready every so often, but you tell me.
As part of our process of listening to people of ICARE, like, we were told stories hundreds of times about flooding. So it was something that was a very pressing concern for our people and the people of all of Jacksonville. And so what we discovered was that there really wasn't a comprehensive assessment of what the flooding problems are there. We know that Jacksonville floods. Everyone knows that. But we were looking for a specific thing called a flood vulnerability assessment. And that we were told by multiple experts that that's what we needed to do in order to understand completely what mitigation needed to happen. But luckily, our city officials, after we pressed them, were paying attention, and we finally were able to get a fully funded flood vulnerability assessment for the city. So it's actually underway, and they have been meeting their targets in terms of gathering the information so we know what next step, so that we are ready for all the changes that are clearly happening.
And plus, City Hall now has a fully funded staff member to handle a lot of issues like this. And certainly, she got an eyeball of them with Ian, and probably more later this week, because the meteorologists are warning us that we're going to have many inches of rain and high winds and coming up the river, which is not a good thing if there's a high tide.
Yeah, so, this is definitely an ongoing thing that we will have to be fighting for a long time.
I mean, those of us who remember Irma remember how shocked we were to see how deep the flooding went into downtown, into San Marco, and down in Mandarin, obviously, has always had issues with Julington Creek. But to see how high even the St. Mary's River is at high tide right now, this is not storm-driven. It seems to be, you're right, having just passed over high tide yesterday at the St. Mary's River and seeing a boat ramp there with very high water, this is certainly an issue. Now, tonight, what's the format at 7 o'clock at Christ the King Catholic Church, 742 Arlington Road North, right there at the corner of Arlington Road and Arlington Expressway? What are you doing, and how are you? Are you going to handle this with Zoom and in person, or what?
We have a few that will be coming in on Zoom, but most we are encouraging in person, because we have not done this before since COVID. So we do have a number of people that will be using the virtual platform, but we want most of our members and people in the community to come to Christ the King Catholic Church there in person.
And what are these specific questions for T.K. Waters and Lakeisha Burton?
Okay, the first question that we are asking is, are you in favor of civil citations for adults?
Now, that question has been asked, to my memory, because I've attended most of their debates, but there were other issues, so I probably wasn't listening. Do you know what, if either one of them responded to that?
Yes, because we met with all five of the candidates, and we got all of their answers. We know that, you know, one is going to say yes, one is going to say no. But
do you have any prepared pushback or secondary questions after you ask them and you get their yes or no?
Well, now this is not going to be a debate. This is a question. We're going to ask a question. We are expecting yes answers, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if we don't get yes answers, they will have 2 minutes to explain why they have answered either yes or no.
And then there's 2 more questions that you have for the candidates.
The second question is asking them about the GVI, which is a group intervention.
Group violence program. Intervention.
And we are wanting the sheriff to contract with that organization so that we can get rid of all of, not all, but we know that we can get rid of some of the things that's happening in our neighborhoods. Crime. We want crime to stop. And that is one of the programs that the sheriff can contract with this group, and they will bring the numbers down, because I can give you some numbers that we've had. GVI reduced youth homicides in Boston by 63%. It reduced gun homicides in Stockton, California by 42%, and reduced shootings in New Haven, Connecticut by 73%.
And I can tell you for a fact that New Haven was certainly, when I was there in the 80s, somewhat of a difficult city, and Stockton is certainly, unfortunately, a name that we've seen. Now, there's one final question.
One final
question.
For
these candidates, and one will be able to say truthfully if they answer yes, and one may not. But what's that question?
Okay, the third and final question is, will you attend the Nehemiah Assembly on April the 17th of 2023?
And that's for all of your members, and you'll probably be Zooming along with multiple church locations that will be filled, as I've remembered in the past.
Yes.
And we're encouraging, because we're post, you know, however you want to characterize it, but we want people who feel comfortable to be in person. So it's going to be a much greater emphasis on in-person attendance at the Nehemiah's.
Now, we've got one more call here, and it's Jill from the Beaches. So, Jill, what's your question for iCare?
Hey, good morning. Thank you so much for taking my call. Love the work iCare is doing. My question is, how is iCare addressing the food deserts in the city? As a vegan, access to affordable plant-based options is very important to me. And we have plenty of places serving animal slaughter products, but very few serving affordable, fresh, plant-based options. Thank you.
Thank you. And yes, definitely, there's been many attempts to put small supermarkets into 32209 and some of the other more troubled districts, but it's very difficult. And if you can't get a bus ride to your local big box shop store, it is tough. And heaven forbid, if you're like him, tired of maybe having that vegan burger and you want to do something interesting, finding fresh food to make a good, you know, casserole or something, vegan casserole is tough. So is that an addressable issue for iCare?
We have in the past worked in the Northwest quadrant on food deserts. However, that's not a push that iCare is making at the moment. But yeah, there's Jacksonville is an area that has lots of areas where we need to pursue justice.
And part of how we make those determinations, it's not that one is necessarily more or less important. Everybody has their issue, but we try, and through our community problems, simply what we're doing tonight is we let all the members of various congregations gather. We identified multiple issues, and then we have a caucus where we actually prioritize issues. So it may be one or two issues every year that we focus on, plus any that carry on. And we find, you know, if we have trying to fix everything at one time, we don't fix anything. And if we focus on one or two main issues, that's where we've been.
Yeah, the more tentacles you have, the less strong they are. But that said, food banks tend to be opportunistic. They get whatever they get. And if they're lucky, they get canned peas. If you're a vegan and they're lucky, they get a lot of canned turkeys or something, or canned ham. And that's not good for you, or not good for your menu choice, and of course the sodium issue, et cetera, et cetera. You'll get a good Thanksgiving meal off what many of these food banks will give out, and a lot of leftovers, like the Mandarin Food Bank, bless their souls, they always get great donations from lots of turkeys, and there's a good chunk of meal there and leftovers. That said, it's fattening, starchy meat versus fresh veggies, which you have to replenish every few days. I know, because I love my salads, and if I don't get to them quick, they're wilted.
Yeah.
You talk about focusing on an issue or two. I've been a reporter here for 30 plus years. I only came aware of eye care 2 years ago when the adult civil citation situation came along. Where has eye care been, or is it very much a grassroots working among the churches and members kind of group?
Well, that's a good point. I think it's something we've been, like Geneva said, in operation for over 20, 25 years. So it's something very well-known in certain parts of the community. What we're trying to do is continue to make it better known, to add more churches or other congregations of faith, to be more and more connected. We already have a great connection and our network in the community. And some of our greatest successes, you probably are familiar. I think the most recent great success was the youth civil citations that I mentioned earlier. And those are times where we listen to the people, we prioritize those issues, we do research and come up with answers, and then we hold elected and appointed officials accountable. And often they will agree. They've done some very good things in response to being more transparent on statistics about crime. So, you know, there's a lot of things that we can work with the community and work with our elected leaders. So being on the radio with you right now is a good way to make that our message and our work better known.
Well, having covered you for the past 2 years, it was nice to finally put some faces to names that weren't on my dusty little screen at home. And when the Nehemiah Assembly is held in April, April 17th, 2023, you will have much of the top end of that program. We'll be discussing what you've discussed, what has worked, and who's involved.
Correct.
All right, guys, just to let you know, we'll wrap this up here. 7 o'clock tonight, November 7th, Christ the King Catholic Church, 742 Arlington Road North. Monsignor Bodie is the guy in charge. These folks will be there with eye care, and they have invited both sheriff's candidates, T.K. Waters, the Republican, Lakeisha Burton, the Democrat. That church is familiar with Burton because she was their zone chief, but T.K. was, through July, the chief of investigation. So some interesting questions expected tonight. And that's about it. Much more still ahead. Later, a warning from pediatricians about RSV infections and your kids. But up next.
I just realized, wow, this was such a fun and exciting environment. I literally packed up my little Datsun Roadster and drove it across country to New York City.
How a First Coast fitness guru built a national empire. That's next, and we'll be right back.
WJCT and ViStar Credit Union are honoring the memory of Fred Rogers by celebrating 20 years of giving back to the community with the annual Mr. Rogers Sweater Drive. The drive runs through November 30th and accepts new and gently used sweaters, jackets, blankets, and new socks and underwear. Contributions may be dropped off at WJCT and all ViStar Credit Union branches, Suddeth Moving and Logistics, and the Tom Bush family of dealerships. For more information, log on to WJCT.org. Contributions will be donated to selected nonprofit facilities within the First Coast area.
Looking for Jaguar parking? Be a part of the coolest tailgating lot in the urban core for the 2022 Jaguar season. More info at wjct.org/parking.
And welcome back. He's built a national fitness empire from right here in Northeast Florida for this month's First Coast Success. Karen Mathis of the Jacksonville Daily Record speaks with fitness guru Craig Pepin-Donat.
Craig Pepin-Donat owns a Crunch Fitness franchise in Harbor Village with plans for a second in Regency. But that's not all. He runs the National Crunch Franchise System. He is a nationally recognized and competitive bodybuilder. And his alter ego is as a fitness rap star called Fitty Smalls. Craig Pepin-Donat, welcome to First Coast Success.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Well, you've been in Jacksonville for 20 years, running and owning fitness centers. But talk about before then. How did you become involved in the industry?
Well, I was just a kid, pretty much, coming out of school, and I had to get a job to make money. So I worked at Burger King, and it wasn't long before I realized I was getting out of shape and, you know, eating fast food. So I joined the local gym And I just realized, wow, this was such a fun and exciting environment. So I that was in California. I literally packed up my little Datsun Roadster, drove it across country to New York City, of all places, because, you know, if you can make it there, you can make it anywhere. So I figured, let me do that. And, you know, I went to New York and I opened up the Yellow Pages to the very first health club that was in there. It was called Apple Health and Sports Club. I didn't have any experience, no certifications, no knowledge other than I, you know, had always been into sports and fitness, and I liked it. I liked the environment, and I thought, what a great, cool thing to do. So I got a job for $350 an hour as a trainer, and, you know, within a couple of months, I was selling, and then a couple of months later, I was the manager of the gym, and, you know, all of a sudden, I'm in this industry. I'm excited and growing, and I've been doing it for 40 years.
Well, you took on a lot of responsibility in the industry at a young age. Was that your career strategy, or did it happen?
No, it was definitely my strategy. I, you know, started thinking very early about how to open gyms, how to, you know, build them. I wanted to own my own gym at a very early age. I have pieces of paper and scraps that I wrote, you know, about, you know, how I would do it, and, you know, the manuals and systems that I would develop. And I mean, so I was always thinking in an entrepreneurial type of, you know, thought pattern. But, you know, I just kept getting different opportunities. I was recruited as the sales director of the New York Health and Racquet Clubs in Manhattan, which was a premier gym in Manhattan at that time. So, you know, I just got on that track. And then later I was promoted to vice president. And then ultimately, when I was 29, I was promoted to president of the company. So at a young age, I was in this executive role and wearing Armani suits and carrying a briefcase and making a lot of money. And I thought, wow, I've made it. You know, I did it. I got all the way into Manhattan, and I'm doing this thing. But, you know, so I've never wavered and thought, oh, I'm going to go do something else.
Well, you're a bodybuilder. You've been a bodybuilder mm-hmm. competitively. Mm-hmm. And what inspired you to do that? It seems to be a natural fit
yeah.
for the industry.
Yeah. Well, I started in my 30s. The reason why I did it was, one, to, you know, inspire and motivate myself. And then also, you know, I've always felt like if you're going to be in the fitness industry, you should live the walk. You should walk the talk, so to speak. So I said, you know, let me go do this and see if I could be successful. The problem was, back then, it was very challenging because I'm not naturally a big, you know, bodybuilder, and they didn't have classic physique or physique. You had to be in bodybuilding, you know, so you're competing against a lot of people that were much bigger, although I, you know, had, you know, other attributes, including definition, conditioning. I just didn't have the size. So, but I did, you know, finish third or second in a couple, and never won one. And then later, it was, you know, almost 25 years later, I came back and revisited it as a master, you know, in the master's division. And then, of course, I had tremendous success with 29 NPC titles, 8 national championships. I got my pro card, and I won 2 of the 3 pro competitions that I competed in. So, yeah, I mean, it was quite a ride, and I've always felt like I kept doing it because people, you know, kind of latched onto it, and I was getting a lot of positive feedback that it was inspirational to other people, and that was, you know, something that really motivated me.
And you've branched out into a lot of other related industries and efforts. And one of them is fascinating, and that fitness rap star. Talk about that.
Fitty Smalls, yeah. Well, you know, it's funny because Fitty Smalls is kind of, I say, the alter ego where anything can happen. I actually competed as, you know, an IFBB pro and as an amateur as Fitty Smalls. You know, so when you're getting up on the stage as Fitty Smalls, you get a different, you know, look from people than maybe if you're being announced as Craig Pepin or not. So, you know, I definitely created a name with that, and that was just a lot of fun. And, you know, after I wrote a book called The Big Fat Health and Fitness Lie, and I did an audio version of The People's Guide to Health, Happiness, and Longevity, which was a collaboration with best-selling authors and doctors. And, you know, I did a lot of things that, you know, was my effort to reach out to more people as an individual as opposed to being connected to a fitness chain. That was my whole thing there. And then I think just naturally with the evolution of communication and YouTube and people, you know, moving more and more towards video, that I came up with the idea to do some parodies and to do videos. And we did 3 or 4 of them. It was a lot of fun. Then I had met a few guys that were real close friends, and we came up with the idea of writing original music, and that's what we did. We wrote actually five original songs, produced four music videos, and these are all also on iTunes, and they're real songs and real music, but it was just an adventure, and you only get one shot in life to live it, and I'm just of the belief that you try as many things as possible, and for me, it's all a bit, again, about reaching out to people, inspiring them, and touching as many people as possible.
Well, you met your wife,
yes,
at one of your gyms, mm-hmm. and you've been married now for what, almost 30 years?
Yeah.
Talk about that.
Yeah, we've been together for 29 years, and we're going on our 27th anniversary. I met her in New York. She was a model. She'd won the Coppertone model search, and I was the president of the company, and I just saw her, and it was bam. I knew it right away. I had to put my people on it, find out if she had a boyfriend and what her story was, and then I had my vice president of marketing call her up to the office to show her book for a TV spot we were doing with Mark Spitz, and naturally she got the job, and I had the opportunity to ask her out, and then had the opportunity also to oversee the commercial shoot to make sure that Mark Spitz kept his hands a little bit off the future wife. So that was the plan, and it worked.
Well, you have two daughters.
Yeah, Sienna and Capri. Sienna also works for me at the gym at Crunch.
Oh, does she?
Yeah, she sure does.
Mm-hmm. Well, so your business is a family business.
Yeah. Yeah. And ultimately, we got the opportunity to go to Jacksonville just as a business opportunity. And although we were certain that we were going to be out of there in a couple of years, we just kept finding reasons to stay. And after 4 or 5 years or so, I looked at my wife and I said, I don't even know what we're trying to get away from. We have this beautiful house. We live in Queens Harbor. We're on the water. I mean, and by the way, this was the first house that we ever owned because prior to that, I'd only owned co-ops and condominiums my whole life, city life. So, buying a 5,000 square foot house in Jacksonville was like really just an investment thing while we did what we were going to do and get back to wherever we were going to go. But I don't see any future plans on moving at this stage. So we're here.
Well, Craig Pepin-Donat, thanks for joining First Coast Success.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Today's segment of First Coast Success is brought to you by First Horizon.
It is a serious respiratory illness swamping children's hospitals here and across the country. A drastic and unusually early spike in the illness known as RSV, swamping pediatric units across the United States and causing long waits for treatment and worries about it this winter. Dr. Mobeen Rathore specializes in pediatric infectious diseases at UofL JAX and is on the line right now. Good morning, doctor.
Good morning. Thank you.
I guess the obvious question, we've been seeing this on network news for the past few weeks, it's swamping some hospitals, but what is RSV?
Well, RSV is a virus that causes respiratory infection, and it almost all children, by the time they are 2 years of age, will get this infection. And the way this infection appears is not any different than your sort of your common cold infection or even early influenza. So it's an infection that is very similar to many of the other viral infections that children will get. And, of course, some children are at increased risk for serious disease and complications with RSV. And this since this occurs usually in infants, they obviously can appear quite ill and end up seeing their doctor and getting admitted to the hospital sometimes.
Well, is this an issue that maybe is compounded by some of these children having already had COVID or possibly flu or other respiratory incidences that weaken their systems?
Well, interestingly, actually, what has happened is the usual season for RSV is October through March in most of the United States and Florida. It's a prolonged season. In Jacksonville, it's usually August, September till April, May. But in the last two seasons, we actually saw a different type of season there. Last season, it started in May, June, and by September, October, it was gone. This year, it started in July, August, and it's still going on. In fact, we are seeing more infections because the pandemic, as you know, with all the precautions we were taking to prevent COVID, was also helping prevent RSV and influenza and other respiratory infections. So many of these children have not been exposed to these viruses. And in fact, some of the children we are seeing are a little bit older than what we usually see. So, and it's not that flu or COVID will make them at an increased risk. It's just that you've done a good job in protecting ourselves from COVID that also led to children not getting RSV and influenza infections. So many of these children are basically catching up. It's almost like a rite of passage. Most children get it about 2 years of age. And by the way, you can get reinfection also. Adults also get this disease infection.
Well, thanks for that good news. Now, are children or even adults who are dealing with long COVID more at risk, or are they suffering more?
No, actually, there's no evidence that if you have had COVID and you have long COVID, you are at an increased risk for RSV. The groups that are at highest risk for morbidity and mortality with RSV are the very young children, the newborns, infants who have certain underlying health condition, heart disease, chronic lung disease, some immune deficiencies, or are just very small premature babies, and of course the elderly who will get RSV and can get really sick, and of course also the immune compromised, the people who have cancer or transplant and are immunosuppressed, they are at increased risk for this infection. Most of us, rest of us, will probably get like a cold, a cough, maybe like a bad cold. But what I want to stress here also, I think, although we talk a lot about RSV, the last data we have from our area about the positivity rate, that's the rate of children or individuals, but in this case children, who are tested and how many of them are positive. RSV was 7.5%, but your rhinoenterovirus, which is the virus that this causes cold, was 34%. And influenza was 28%, and it's increasing. I also want to remind your listeners that although Florida has a moderate influenza activity right now, but states all around us, Georgia, Alabama, South Carolina, North Carolina, Mississippi, Tennessee, all have high or severe high rates of influenza. So I think it's time that everybody who's eligible, that's anybody 6 months of age and older, should get the flu vaccine, because that's one thing you can prevent. This whole, unfortunately, other than the very young infants who are at chronic, who are at increased risk for these infections that I mentioned earlier, there's no preventive medicine. So I think there are other viruses. The COVID right now is about 2.5%, but there's still concern that COVID may spread a little bit later in the season. So getting your COVID booster and COVID vaccine is also critical.
Well, that leads to another question before I ask you what the numbers are like in Jacksonville for RSV. Here we are within a few weeks of Thanksgiving. Here we are within a month and a half of Christmas. And again, the skyways are exploding as people are visiting families. And unlike last year, where at least there were some masks in use, I hardly see any. So is there a concern of some infectious disease rise over the upcoming winter holidays from people who are, wow, I'm free, let's enjoy life, and maybe they should have taken that last booster?
Well, I think even before we had COVID, even before we were so concerned about that, these family gatherings were always events that could be super spreader events. Now, that didn't stop us from having these gatherings and shouldn't stop us from having these gatherings. But when you are travel, just use common sense. You know, there's no reason you can't use a mask. I think it's not required, but there's no reason you can't. And so if you are sick, please avoid gatherings. You know, that's one way you can help your family not getting sick. So I think, yes, there is a concern. And, you know, we talked about this regarding influenza before COVID was a thing. And these gatherings do carry a risk. But, you know, life has to go on. And I think I would say that, you know, we continue with these gatherings. If you're traveling by plane, you know, use your common sense, use masks. So, you know, if you're sick, you know, stay away, wash your hands. You know, if you cough, cover your cough in an appropriate manner. And when you are in your family gathering, same thing. If you are sick, please don't join the gathering. I know it's tough, but that's important for your family. And of course, getting the flu vaccine and getting the COVID vaccine is tremendous benefit because it not only protects you against those infections, but if you get a co-infection with RSV and you already have flu or you already have COVID, we know that these co-infections, the outcome can be much worse.
Well, speaking about outcome, what are the numbers like for RSV in Jacksonville's hospitals, and what age range are you seeing for those that are being hospitalized?
Yeah, we certainly have a lot more kids in the hospital than we usually see, and you have used, I think people have used the term that the hospital admissions are exploding. I would remind your listeners that most children who even now who have RSV will just have a cold-like symptom and nothing will happen. A few of them will go up ending up seeing a doctor, their pediatrician, and a few will be sick enough to end up in the ED. And actually, it's a very small number of children who get RSV who are actually admitted to the hospital. And most of them who are admitted to the hospital will be there for one or two days and will be discharged. Now, there are children who are going to get very ill. They may get into ICU. They may get intubated. And unfortunately, very few, but some may also die of this. This is especially for those children who have chronic underlying health conditions that I alluded to earlier. But we are seeing RSV in a little bit older children. And the reality is most children who are being admitted to the hospital are previously healthy children. So I think it's important that we remind ourselves that, you know, we can still do the common sense things of washing our hands, staying away when you're sick. And if you're, you know, if your child certainly is sick, they need to be admitted. They should be admitted. There's not a treatment we can provide, but we can manage them, help them support until they get over the hump. And hopefully most of these children would be fine after that.
So what symptoms should mom and dad, grandma and grandpa be looking for in not only the kids, but the adults? I mean, we are in the midst of some recent allergic stuff. I myself have had some allergies symptoms. What should I be looking for in my grandson?
Yeah, so I suffer from those allergies. I get allergic cough. So I think the challenge is that many of these symptoms are overlapping. Now, if you have allergies, you should not get a fever. So that's one thing you can take, you know, you can think about that. Allergies should not give you a fever. Now, if you have allergies, you can get other infections that can cause fevers, but the allergies in and of themselves will not give you a fever. All these other infections will often give you a fever, low grade or high grade. Now, it's extremely difficult early on, especially early on, to differentiate between RSV, COVID, influenza, cold virus. They all look very similar. But I think that's why it's so important that those of which we can prevent COVID and influenza, we should definitely get those vaccines and prevent that. So if you're, for yourself and your grandson and your children, I think the thing you have is, you know, if you get a cold-like symptoms with a low-grade fever even, you could have any of those infections. So follow the common sense rules, good hand hygiene. Cover your cough appropriately, wear a mask, you know, stay away from gatherings if you're sick, you know, especially if you have some vulnerable people, elderly or very young infants, especially those who have chronic underlying health conditions, or if you have other adults, other people who have cancer or are immunosuppressed, you know, stay away from them. You need to protect them. So I think that the other thing is if those high-risk people, if all of us get who are around them get immunized, we will do what's called cocooning. You know, they can get the infection. They may not be able to get the vaccine, but if everybody around them gets it, then it also offers an opportunity to protect those high-risk vulnerable individuals.
Okay, thank you, doctor. We've got a hard break coming up, and then we have some good news to talk to. So thank you, Dr. Rathore. Up next, Josh Torres on the Jaguars Win. We'll be right back.
Clay Today, proudly serving Clay County, Florida. The Clay Today, Clay County Leader, Oakleaf, and Keystone Heights Herald. Your community newspapers. More information at claytodayonline.com.
Family Support Services asks you to be an angel to a child in foster care this holiday season by sponsoring a Christmas wish list. Duval and Nassau counties have 1,200 kids in their system of care. More at beanangeljacks.org.
Facts about Florida history can be found in novels as well as nonfiction books. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, will discuss creative Florida history. We'll talk about historic plat maps and the endangered Colvin House in Polk County. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on WJCT News 89.9.
I'm Robin Young. The new Black Panther movie is coming out. Angela Bassett returns, but without the actor who played her son, Chadwick Boseman, who died of cancer.
I think every tear you saw was indeed a tear of grief and remembrance of him.
Angela Bassett, next time, here and now.
Today at 2 on WJCT News 89.9.
Poll workers across the country are preparing for the big day. Many have come under attack, and the threats don't stop there.
Russia is the hurricane. China's climate change in the sense of political interference.
Next time on 1A, what to expect and not expect as you cast your ballot in the midterms.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
And welcome back. Well, the Jags got a win for the first time in a long time, snapping a five-game losing streak with a 27-20 win over the Las Vegas Raiders. So Josh Chore is right here, right now, with an update on the weekend's sports. So, Josh, what are your thoughts?
Oh, Dan, I mean, it was just great. It was great to get to see the team finally win again and see everybody getting to leave TIA Bank Field with a smile on their face, happy. And that's what the team really needs, is to get back to that. I mean, for a while there, I think everybody, including everyone in the press box, kind of just thought, it's same old, same old. They go down 17-0 very early on in the game. They allow Davante Adams, one of the best receivers in the league, to have 146 yards and two touchdown catches before halftime. And so I'm pretty sure everybody just went, this is over. Let's just go have some beer and have some fun for the rest of the night. And we'll pretend like this game didn't happen. And then just something clicked. And that is what we've all been saying all year, is waiting for that click to happen, where they've had these close games where they can stay in it, and all it takes is one play, one thing to change, and they're winning games. And they have a winning record. Obviously, they don't right now, but that's all they needed, was the click to happen. And you saw that yesterday in the second half, where they had something going for them. They went into halftime down 20-10, and they scored 17 unanswered points in the second half. And that is what they needed. They got a big win, had some very, very big plays by a lot of guys on the team, and ultimately came out with the win and finally snapped this five-game losing streak.
You know, you always hope that they come out of the locker room after the chat or the talk or the yelling and screaming by the coach with some fire in their belly, and it was obvious, but it was still a near thing. I mean, there were certainly, even Lawrence himself got in a few good yards, and that probably wasn't in the game plan.
Yeah, and that was the one thing I was really happy to see, was the rushing game really came alive. Travis Etienne had 109 yards rushing and two touchdowns yesterday. Trevor Lawrence showed his legs and got really into the game. And that is what you needed. You need to see that all that offense clicking like that. And I mean, and Travis Etienne, you look at him, he's fifth in the league in rushing. We have a top five running back essentially in the league, and we're seeing him get those carries. Obviously, it's very sad to have to see that come at the price of James Robinson getting traded to the Jets. Obviously, we loved him. It was that beautiful Cinderella story of going undrafted, comes into the league rookie year, gets 1,000 yards. But we needed to stop seeing this let's go back and forth between a number one running back and just, hey, you're the number one guy. This is your game. And that's what we saw. And now we see Travis Etienne really, really starting to come into his own and showing maybe that first round pick that everybody thought was kind of a weird pick is really showing itself and really showing how him and Trevor Lawrence are clicking. And he's getting in the pass game too. And you saw that. And when you see all that clicking and you see what's going on the field yesterday, man, this team really can be something, and that's what we need to see way more often. And again, back to the second half, I said that Davante Adams had 146 yards and two touchdowns off of 9 catches in the first half. For the entire game, he had 10 catches for 146 yards and two touchdown catches. In the second half, he had 1 catch for 0 yards, and it was just a soft dump-off pass that the defense read hook, line, and sinker. Caught him before he even got back to the line of scrimmage. And that's what they needed. They've always come out of the locker room flat-footed, and you just really needed to see them take a bigger step. And Doug Peterson saw that yesterday, and this is what he had to say after the game.
You know, we just regrouped really at halftime. I don't think there were a ton of changes. You know, quite frankly, the guys were in position in the second half, and that's part of what we're trying to teach these guys here. You know, and how to win and to stay within themselves. You know, just do their job and in the second half they did that and we got great pass rush. We had our chances at some interceptions, you know. We got to work on that, obviously, but just a really good defensive performance in the second half.
So yeah, they just really came out alive in the second half, and it was great to see them come out with a W.
Well, you know, there were some flashes of brilliance. London, certainly, it wasn't as if this was a really desperate, oh my gosh, they're never going to ever win team. But again, you got the new coach, new players, and maybe this time those flashes of brilliance just gelled.
And that's what you're hoping for. You're just hoping it continues to gel. There's always going to be growing pains with a new coach coming, and especially with everything that Trevor Lawrence and a lot of the other rookies had to deal with last year. And I've always said that Trevor Lawrence essentially had to unlearn everything from last year. Obviously, we all know the disaster that was Urban Meyer. We've had our fun with that, but he had to move on, and he's had to kind of unlearn a lot of the stuff that he learned last year and take what Doug Peterson has to say. Doug Peterson played in the NFL. He won a Super Bowl. Granted, he was as a backup, but still, he still has been in Trevor Lawrence's position, and Trevor Lawrence has really got to soak up everything that he has right now and remember that he's got to be that leader, and he's got to be the first person to show, hey, we're still in this, guys. Let's go get a W, and let's take this win.
And here we are in football. There was actually a baseball bit of news over the weekend, too, with a World Series win.
Oh, yes. The Houston Astros taking that win, and Mr. Mattress Mack winning a nice $75 million. So if he'd like to make a donation to WJCT Public Media, we would love to see that money for us.
I will second that. And obviously, we also had a little football coach news I seem to remember seeing somewhere. Somebody got fired?
Yes, we've had some changes. I mean, it's that time of season right now where there's a lot of changes going on, and a lot of those coaches. Yesterday, I saw some signs for calling for the head of the Vegas head coach. So you're going to see a lot of changes coming up for teams that aren't doing well.
All right, that's it for First Coast Connect, and incidentally, that my first time flying solo on this, so David Luckin is our executive producer, our senior producer, Heather Schatz, our director, Josh Torres, you just heard him, with technical help from Morning Edition host, Michelle Corum. Thank you, Michelle. Any questions or comments about First Coast Connect, send an email to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. I'm Dan Scanlon in for Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on WJCT News 89.9 Jacksonville. Thank you for the company, and make it a positive day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.